blocking. Deep pattern. Downfield. Touchdown, Miami. What a throw. Devontae Parker.
Holy smokes. What a drive.
What is up, Dolph fans, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast, part of the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network, covering your team, your Miami Dolphins. How is it going, everybody? It is the last show of this week, the final week before we get into training camp next week. I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and as always, I am here to bring you your daily dose of Miami Dolphins football. And on today's show, we saved perhaps the best for last with the secondary coming on the next two podcasts here, one today, one next week. Today we stop by the cornerbacks room to discuss Miami's talent both on the field, but also in the coaching ranks. Experience, accomplished resumes, promising youngster. This group has a little bit of everything as we dive into one of the true driving forces of this football team. All of that and a heck of a lot more on this edition of the Drive Time Podcast.
Another Miami Dolphins.
And Drive Time, as always, is brought to you by Auto Nation. And we have just two more position groups to go in this preview series. And I guess, funny enough, I tend to... the series approach for podcasting and writing always follows the same arc for me. Maybe it's the same for other content creators out there. Super pumped in the beginning, you hit a bit of a lull in the middle, and then you finish very strongly because you can see the end of the tunnel finally. And not to say I don't dislike any of the position groups we covered, it's just 11-part series can be a lot to take on, and I'm happy to do it. It really educates me as far as the roster right before training camp with all of the final details and notes and film I do, so I really appreciate doing the series. But let's just say I'm excited to come to the end and get to practices on the field and bring you fresh new content for 2021. Two more groups to go in the preview series, and the penultimate group here brings us to the cornerbacks. And I wrote about this a lot last year on Top News, on the Blitz, on the post-game stories, on Inside the Numbers, on the features, whatever it was, we wrote about it last year, how the secondary really helped to set the table for this defense, and of course the defense helped drive the team to the 10 victories last season, finishing atop the league in two of the very most important categories you can finish atop the league in the National Football League: takeaways and third down defense. Under 40% on third down and 29 takeaways a year ago. What a season it was. You have to scrap all that and start all the way over again because that's how this league works. You don't get to resume your spot from last season. You go back to level one regardless of how it finished, and you have to get to the ultimate boss at the end every single year and play the entire game on the way. Enough of the video game analogies to finish out that thought. This defense also finished near the top in two other very important categories, too. Sixth in points allowed, entered week 17, number one in points allowed, and then 10th in sacks, of course. But how important are sacks? I think that's a great argument to be had from football savants and the like, because they are very important. Do not get me wrong. Negative plays help set the pace or the tone or dictate the call on the following play and really take command of that particular series if you're on defense, and it puts you in a big bind if you're on offense, especially when you get 6 or 7 or 8 yard losses. I mean, 2nd and 16, that's a tough down and distance to overcome. But I think that impacting the quarterback is even more important than that. And the way all of this came together for the Dolphins was a variety of fronts, blitzes, and rushes and waves with different guys that can do multiple things. And the general goal is to just make the quarterback uncomfortable, make him feel you. Coach Flores talked about that a lot last year as well. And that was driven in large part by what the Dolphins' secondary was able to do and the faith the coaching staff had in the back end to really call up some of the aggressive calls and the zero blitz and the zero pressure. We talked about it on the podcast. This Dolphins' secondary and the conversion from former cornerbacks to safeties or guys that play slot and safety, guys that can play outside, inside. Even Byron Jones has played all over the formation in his career. And so I go back to this post I wrote up on MiamiDolphins.com last December that coincided with a radio appearance NFL Network's Brian Baldinger made on 1240 AM KFG Sports Radio. And the spot linked to an article on the station's website where Baldy said that Miami were ahead of schedule in year two under Coach Flores and Chris Greer. And then back to my piece, I titled it, kind of working off of that, the Byron Jones effect, because I think Byron's style of play comes with a significant degree of misunderstanding from what his actual role and responsibility and production has been here so far through one season in Miami. And it doesn't necessarily make for the highlight reel, you know, where you have the hype music over the top and you clip that 1% of a player's game to use as evidence to justify his skill set. I mean, you go through the course of Byron Jones's career, 2 picks last year was a career high. And hell, even Coach Flores touched on that several times last year with regards to how great the splash plays are. Like, don't get it twisted. Sacks and interceptions and fumbles and all that stuff are fantastic, and you have to have that as a football team. But he is more concerned about the other 990 snaps a player takes over the course of a 16-game season and the approximate 1,000 snaps per every position you have on the field. So guys that play, you know, outside corner, or your best pass rusher who plays 800, 900 snaps, if they're getting 10 sacks or 5 picks, that's a very small percentage of their overall workload. And so with Byron Jones, and this goes back to his time in Dallas, where their defense was so often, at least to my somewhat trained eye, the classic Sam Madison quote. And those that haven't heard Channing Crowder on the Fish Tank podcast with Seth and Juice, where he talks about his first year as a pro with Sam Madison, the Dolphins' former all-pro cornerback. Sam was coming towards the end of his Dolphins career in 05, and Channing's first year with Miami was 05, and how they played 10-on-10, because Sam would break the huddle, get out there and yell, 10-on-10, 10-on-10, and Channing does this in Sam's high-pitched voice, which I will not try to emulate, but I'll save you the grief there and let Channing take care of the comedy for you on the Fish Tank podcast. But that was a good comparison to Byron Jones in Dallas, and you see this in a lot of teams where sometimes the corner who just matches up with and takes the best receiver on the other side doesn't even join the huddle. He's just out there on the island kind of peeking in because he knows his job, and it can often be the loneliest place in football if that matchup doesn't go well. Like, cornerbacks have it so tough. If you play 60 good snaps and the 61st snap a guy gets behind you and scores a touchdown, that's all anybody's going to remember. So it can be the loneliest place in football. But for Byron, that island was very rarely a deserted situation in Dallas and here in Miami. He was the premier corner in the league with the Cowboys doing just that. Like, you go back to his coverage numbers, the GPS tracking, the windows that he created for quarterbacks on throws throughout the course of his career has been among the league's best among cornerbacks. And that's how you wind up with this following data from that 2019 season that I researched and wrote about in the Byron Jones free agent acquisition piece 2 Marches ago. And these were some of the matchups that Byron had between 2018 and 2019, going back off the previous 2 years of work in that article. Michael Thomas, 2 times. 2 catches for 21 yards in one game, nada the next. Goose egg to Alshon Jeffrey. Goose egg for Odell Beckham Jr. Stephon Diggs from the Vikings before the Bills. 1 catch, 11 yards. John Brown, 1 catch for 6 yards. He matched up with both Brandon Cooks and Robert Woods against the Rams because they do so much different formation swapping and condensed formations, and they force Byron Jones to come in and play a bit of a different role against that team. 2 catches for 19 yards together against Byron Jones in coverage. Julio Jones, 1 for 19. T.Y. Hilton, 1 for 23. And there aren't any interceptions in that list, but when your mission is to lock down the opposing number one receiver, you take that and you never, ever, ever turn back. That's a way bigger impact on a game for 60 snaps a game to erase a true difference maker on the offense. Way bigger difference than just getting one takeaway and giving up 8 catches for 90 yards and a touchdown, whatever it might be. So we saw more of that this year, but the Dolphins defense was more complex than just saying, hey, Byron, 10 on 10, you're out there. More well-rounded than just to say, you go do this and worry about nothing else. That's just not how this defense works. You have to play a zone, you have to play man, you have to tackle, you have to be a little bit of everything. And that's not a bad approach to have your 10 on 10. It worked for Miami back in the early 2000s with Sam Madison and then, of course, Patrick Surtain later. But Miami just had a lot of talent in this part of the team at that cornerback position. So again, he's playing man coverage, he's pressing, he's zone turning, falling off into the curl, he's coming up to the flat and challenging underneath receivers, he's defending the run, he's playing a crucial part of what made the Dolphins defense tick to the tune of the top 10 production in sacks, points, takeaways, and third down defense. So Brian Baldinger last year had this to say in that interview: Brian Flores has a clear vision for how he wants to play defense, and it starts with guys that can lock down on the outside. That's the foundation. Pass rush, it's not about sacks. It's about pressure and what that pressure does to other teams' quarterbacks and offenses. Where have you heard that before? And then, of course, that sped-up process for the quarterback is compounded by the fact that you have sticky coverage that loves to challenge receivers at the line and make them earn every inch. And that's not just necessarily, you know, an individual trait. We've been talking about Byron Jones because I just love the way Byron approaches the game. And I do think that his production and skill set and value, I think, is a little bit underrated for this Miami Dolphins team based upon what I see on social media and otherwise. But the Dolphins' defensive backfield, and we'll talk about this in the coaching section. I mean, you go back to 2019, Coach Flores with Josh Boyer then as the defensive backs coach, they were pulling guys off the street. And then literally 5 days later, like, we had a Tuesday signing. I think it was Tay Hayes before the Bengals game in 2019, the Week 16 game where Fitzpatrick threw for 8,000 yards and the Bengals came back and it went to overtime and Isaiah Ford had the big catch and then Jason Sanders wins the game with the field goal at the end there. But in that game, and this was the deal throughout the entire season, right? But in that game, Tay Hayes, I believe, signed on Tuesday and then went out and played like 30 snaps on Sunday. And the Dolphins got production from guys like that all season long. Like, Ken Crawley comes over from the Saints that year. Adrian Colbert signs late in the year as a safety and produces the final month of the season as Miami goes 3-2 with two wins over division champions that season. So this is not like something new to 2020, and I don't expect it to be, you know, new to 2021. It's something they've just done. They've curated success and they've curated production from that position. And again, to go back to the New England days with Josh Boyer and Brian Flores, I mean, J.C. Jackson, undrafted free agent. Malcolm Butler, undrafted free agent. They bring Stephon Gilmore in, who was a first-round draft pick of the Bills and played really well for the Bills. Then he gets to New England and he becomes like the best cornerback in the National Football League. I mean, these guys just coach up defensive backs. It's the proof is in the pudding. Like, I can talk about it until I'm blue in the face, but the production is there. The evidence is there on tape and the stats. And these guys, they continue to curate more talent at the position, and that only continues to make the production go up and up and up. And that pairs so well with the pass rush scheme you have up front that just makes the quarterback uncomfortable enough into decisions that puts the ball in tight windows, and that's how you wind up leading the NFL in takeaways. So I wrote about the Byron Jones effect and how he missed the Buffalo game, the first Buffalo game last year, sans the first series, and ironically, he makes a tackle short of the sticks in that first series, and then an incomplete pass goes in his direction on that first series to get a three and out and force the Bills to punt. But on that third down play, he comes up kind of limping and holding the groin, and it made him miss that game, the rest of that game, the Jacksonville game on Thursday night, and the Seattle game in week four. And so you take all three of those games and consider that he did play the first one, but you consider it three missed games because it was literally three snaps. But with Byron on the field and without Byron on the field, at the point of this article, was 25 points per game allowed without him and 16.3 points per game allowed with him in the lineup. And that leads into the second point about the ability to mix coverage and further confuse the quarterback. And this coincides with something we're going to cover more on Monday's Safety Preview podcast and Gerald Alexander preaching communication and how bad communication leads to mistakes, and mistakes at that level of the defense leads to big plays. And again, just trying to get a feel for what I'm seeing on tape, it's a lot with this Dolphins defense, and I can't possibly know exactly what the call is when I'm not part of the meetings or the install or any part of that process, but you look for indicators, right? Like, a cornerback backs out before the snap and turns his butt to the sideline, that's going to be zone coverage. That's a zone turn versus a man turn. You know the difference in what you're looking at if you study the game enough to not have a call but understand what the defense is doing. So there's this fun coverage where I went back into the classroom to kind of teach myself, or I guess the lab, as GA would say, and taught myself this coverage that I wasn't very familiar with, because I think that's what I saw on a particular play in the Chargers game, a buzz six. And to break it into layman's terms, it's quarter, half quarter, and that basically defines your deep part of the field. You have one man that falls back into a quarter portion of the field, a man in the middle of the field, typically your free safety, who plays the half, and then the other portion of the deep part of the field is covered by another quarter player. So two quarters and a half makes a full. You have the entire back end of the coverage rounded out. And the beauty of this defense, and what I think Byron Jones showcased in that regard, is that he can get to all those different looks while everything looks the exact same at the snap. He's up in your face. He's going to show challenging as far as pressing at the line. He's going to show mirror technique. He's going to bail technique sometimes. You can mix it up in the way that pass rushers mix it up and what they throw at opposing offensive linemen. So the quarterback is dealing with pressure packages. He has to get his protection right to afford him that valuable 2.5 seconds, and then he has to hope his receivers can uncover in that time against some of the best sticky cover corners in the National Football League, and even safeties that, you know, have to come down to challenge routes at the line to take out your tight end or your running back. It's just a lot to deal with. So that's why you get some of these games last year where Miami just completely destroyed the quarterback stat line compared to what they were doing previously in that season. So yes, the Dolphins did rank near the top of the league in terms of man coverage played via, you know, Pro Football Focus, Football Outsiders, Sharp Football. A lot of publications can verify this for us. But even then, the top three teams were the Dolphins, Patriots, and Lions. And even their man coverage rates are just a smidge over 50%. So you're still going to be in zone half the time. So that's my little tutorial on coverage, how it works, some kind of explanation of this defense and what makes it unique and what makes it productive in terms of that portion of the field. And I hope that pairs well with the breakdowns we did on the line and at the second level with the linebackers. But it all works together. Like Bo Burnham says, everything works when everything works together. And when you consider how many sub packages the Dolphins go with, you know, 6, 7, even sometimes 8 defensive backs on the field late in games, you need depth in this group. And that's why you see so many transactions at this position. We saw it all last training camp or the run-up to training camp, bringing in guys for a look like a Javaris Davis or a Tino Ellis, for instance. Davis came, went, and then came back last year. Now he's here on a futures contract. Then this year you get an even more considerable investment with a Justin Coleman, a Jason McCourty, and then on the back end with Javon Holland as well. After getting Byron Jones and Brandon Jones, and you can just never have enough defensive backs. And Coach Flores, Chris Greer, Josh Boyer, all these guys have made an emphasis on rounding out this group with talent to execute the scheme. So I asked Coach Flores about that on draft weekend, and he said, yeah, it's a passing league, and he and Chris Greer have shown their commitment to the position and to the crux of the defense by investing into the position the highest dollar amount in terms of salary for 2021 of any NFL team. And look at the dividends you get. It just speaks to the larger vision, the plan to execute that vision, to kind of take it day by day and figure out what you have to do to get to that final point, and then you see it all play out. That is one of my favorite aspects of this team that I've seen play out really in my 25 plus years of watching Dolphins football. Like, you told me what you were going to do, you did the moves to make it happen, and then you produced it on Sundays. Like, what more could you want as a fan than that? To me, nothing. So we get to the piece here on MiamiDolphins.com, taking a look at the Dolphins cornerback room and getting you kind of your training camp guide here ahead of Wednesday's first practice. Go ahead and follow me on Twitter at WingfieldNFL and follow the team at Miami Dolphins for all the live training camp updates. And also go ahead and just completely obliterate that subscribe button on your podcast app, because we're going to have daily podcasts, daily stories. We're going to talk to players and have coaches interviews in terms of the press conferences. Going to be great, great Dolphins coverage for you here on the Drive Time podcast presented by Auto Nation. So let's go ahead and meet the cast. But first, some of the changes and staff notes here. Justin Coleman comes over from the Lions, and Trill Williams, another new addition. He was with the Saints originally as a UDFA. He is now here with the Miami Dolphins, and there weren't any departures at the cornerback position. And entering his third season now with the Miami Dolphins, new cornerbacks coach Charles Burks, he is in his first season at the cornerbacks coach position. He has a very interesting route to getting here in Miami. And before serving as a Dolphins defensive assistant for 2019 and 2020, so he was here for both those years in terms of seeing the groundwork laid, Burks was the DC at Southeastern Oklahoma State. At the time of his hire, he was the youngest coordinator in the Great American Conference at the age of 26. And after his first coaching job, which was at his alma mater, East Central University in Oklahoma, Burks took a Texas two-step, pardon the pun there, with stops at Texas A&M Commerce and West Texas A&M. And working primarily with the cornerbacks in 2020, Burks' name often came up in player press conferences as an integral force for the success of the room. Here's what Byron Jones had to say in practice. And this is my question for Byron, because Byron's always doing something. Like, he's always getting into his stance or doing a back pedal or working on his hips, whatever it might be. He's just always doing something. I love to watch him practice. And so he told me this in response to that question. In practice, I'm working on small things, so oftentimes I work with Chuck, Charles Burks, and we're doing looking over the shoulder, catching the ball at the highest point. We'll just walk through some of the man coverage in terms of getting out of your break, 45 degrees downhill, a 90 degree break, just kind of slow things down, but allow yourself to work on the technique component of it, end quote. And so when Byron talks about those different degrees in terms of how he kind of flips the hips and opens the hips and closes and clicks and closes, all the fun scouting terms you've heard, it basically works upon different route concepts and where his ultimate landmark to get to in that man coverage or where to find the spot in zone coverage, whatever it might be, that's what he's talking about there. So head coach Brian Flores, of course, led the Patriots safety room for 3 years, while DC Josh Boyer headed up rooms in the secondary there for 11 years prior to his promotion to defensive coordinator. So plenty of experience at this particular position group in the defensive backfield. And Gerald Alexander held the same job as DB's coach at California and Montana State. He also worked a little bit with UW and Jimmy Lake up there and Chris Peterson for 4 years at Cal and Montana State combined before arriving to South Florida. And of course, he had a nice 5-year playing career in the National Football League too. So the experience there, it's notable. I think last year Miami found the right ingredients, but then proceeded in 2021 to kind of take it to another level because Byron Jones gave Miami the two perimeter cornerbacks with accomplished resumes. He and Xavier Howard have been doing this for a while. They've been good players in this league for a while. And together they blanketed opposing receivers, giving Miami one of the league's most imposing tandems, particularly when it comes to that man coverage. Of course, X led the NFL with the 10 picks, while Jones set a career high in his own right in that department with 2 interceptions. Nick Needham transitioned, and talking about development of UDFAs, talked about Malcolm Butler, J.C. Jackson, Nick Needham, another feather in the cap here of Josh Boyer and Brian Flores, because he transitions into the slot after a year of playing primarily on the perimeter. And out of Texas El Paso, UDFA, comes into the league first 2 years and plays 1,360 reps with 4 picks, 18 pass breakups, 112 tackles, and a pair of sacks. Like, you don't project that kind of production from a guy that didn't go in the draft at all. Went UDFA. Now, guys come out of that spot all the time and produce, but it's still a very good accomplishment for a coaching staff when you can get that to happen. And of course, for Nick, too, the work he's put in has been very commendable. The Dolphins add competition there with Justin Coleman, who was one of the game's premier slot cornerbacks with Seattle before taking a more widespread role with the Lions the last 2 seasons. Then you've got second-year cornerback Noah Igbinoghene, whose versatility has been a talking point this offseason. He can play both inside and outside, at least the physical makeup says so, and the coaches say so. Jamal Perry has also seen some time in the slot, outside, at safety, and mostly on special teams. And then you have a collection of UDFAs and members of last year's practice squad trying to add competition to the room. Terrell Bonds, Javaris Davis, and Tino Ellis all have a year of experience with this Dolphins club, while undrafted rookies Trill Williams and Jaitlin Askew, a special teams phenom at Georgia Tech, look to make their mark in their first NFL training camp. Let's get to the players here and go more in-depth on these guys. Noah Igbinoghene, number 9. Remember that in training camp. Number 9, not 23 for Noah Igbinoghene. He's the lone single-digit cornerback on the roster. 1 season of experience out of Auburn. He's 21 years old on opening day. People forget that? 21 years old. Youngest player in the NFL last season earned valuable experience in that rookie campaign, and I thought the on-field work was really supplemented by the plethora of knowledge and wisdom imparted from Miami's experienced players and coaches at the position, because if you know anything about Noah, he is a sponge that soaks it all up. He's an exceptional athlete who flipped from wide receiver to cornerback ahead of his sophomore season at Auburn, and he allowed a career passer rating of 73.6 and a completion rate of 47.3 in college. He was damn good in college. That's why he goes in the first round. And here's what Byron Jones had to say about Noah Igbinoghene's professionalism. He's an incredible talent. I think the way he's approaching the game this year is going to be special. I think, to be honest, as a rookie, he balled out in camp. I was really impressed with the way he performed and approached the game. He's been consistent throughout the entire season in terms of the coaching. Chuck, Charles Burks, is not easy on anybody. He's certainly not easy on the guys he knows the expectations are very high for. I think Noah did an incredible job of just being there, being attentive every single day, and learning and trying to put forth what Coach Chuck was wanting out of him, end quote. And then, of course, you go back to the work ethic installed at a young age. This is the son of 2 Olympic athletes, 2 Olympians, sprinters, nonetheless, that can flat out fly. And he's talked about his workouts as a child, or I've read about it on The Athletic. There's a great Bruce Feldman story on The Athletic from his time at Auburn, where it would detail his workouts with his father. And other kids would say, hey, I want to come do what Noah does. I want to come work out. And they would come work out for one day, and they would never see that kid again because they're like, I'm not doing that. That's way too much work. So the discipline, the work habits, it's all there for Noah Igbinoghene. And of course, we saw him play a lot early in the year last year. Then he kind of went to special teams and did some kick returning. And then he comes back in that Bengals game after an ejection, puts him into the lineup. And I thought he had great tape in that game. And one of the things that really stood out to me on his tape, both as a pro and in college, is the change of direction skill set. And that's what playing cornerback is. I mean, you're going to follow around guys that are just so quick-footed and so sharp that can bend off those routes and snap things off and get to a new spot in an instant. There's a great rep, and I have it on Twitter. You can search my handle, Noah Igbinoghene, at Winkler NFL. Go to videos. There's a rep of him going up against Kyle Pitts in 2019 where Pitts takes an outside release, and as he tries to cross face, Noah's outside foot digs into the turf, and all in one motion, he hits that back pedal, fires out of it, opens the hips, and drives forward. Like, I just don't understand that movement ability. My body certainly can't do it. Most people can't do it, but I think that rare athletic ability is what you see in terms of the upside, and you pair that with what Byron Jones just said with how he works. I'm so high on Noah Igbinoghene. I love his talent. I love what he's about. I love his humility. I'm very excited to watch this guy in camp. He might be the guy I'm most excited to watch this training camp of anybody on the roster. Jaylen Askew, number 20, the rookie out of Georgia Tech, 22 years old opening day. He played just 9 defensive snaps his final year at GT, but he was a fixture on the special teams unit. He made 9 total tackles via Pro Football Focus during his 4 years on special teams, a period that spanned 393 snaps. And in 157 career coverage reps at Georgia Tech, Askew allowed just 56.5% of his passes targeted for his man to be completed. So some good coverage numbers there as well. We then get to Byron Jones next on our list. He is number 24, 6 seasons out of UConn, 28 years old on opening day. We talked about him a lot in the podcast, but a sterling 5-year run with the Cowboys where he started as a safety, flipped to cornerback, and then came to Miami to help elevate this Dolphins secondary into one of the league's most productive units. His work ethic and approach to the game has kept him on top of his craft from day one as a rookie with the Dallas Cowboys after he broke records for the broad jump at the scouting combine. Athletic measurements, the guy can just bounce out of the gym. He's fast, he can change direction, elite level skills that way. But he talked about his approach this offseason, which I found interesting, saying, quote, I'd love to work on my technique more and just become more of a technician and not rely solely on my athleticism. I also like to be more of a playmaker and get my head around and take more chances at the ball, end quote. I asked him about that stuff he does in practice and on the field in between series coming out of the locker room at halftime. And he said, when you jump onto the field, like it could be a quick turnover, you have to be able to get out there and, kind of paraphrasing, go from 0 to 60 to keep up with some of the elite burners in this league. You go from sitting still on the sideline to running full speed. You got to stay ready for that. So I'm going to be prepared the best I can to stay loose and be ready. So when I have to put the helmet on and go out there, I'm ready to go. And just the work he does with Coach Burks off to the side at practice. When you come to practice, if you do next week with us, check it out. Check out 24 out there working with Coach Burks. He is always doing something to make his game better. Up next, Xavien Howard, number 25, 5 years in the NFL out of Baylor, 28 years old opening day. And we know about the production from this guy. He's been one of the best in the NFL, taking the football away over the last several years. Double-digit picks last year for the first time in a season since Antonio Cromartie did that in 2007. He allowed a completion rate of just 54.5% last year with only 7.7 yards per target in his coverage. That's from Pro Football Focus. His 20 passes defensed led the NFL en route to a first-team All-Pro selection. I love the way this guy presses. I love the way he challenges routes. He has a great ability of kind of showing the quarterback a window and then taking it away at the last minute. That's how I think he gets a lot of those interceptions, kind of working on some of those crossing routes, and just the ability to make the play on the football. I think it's a very valuable thing to the defense, and I think it rubs off on some of the other guys like Byron Jones had mentioned there as well. And, you know, we'd be remiss to not mention the situation with Xavien Howard at OTAs and not being there during OTAs. And, you know, Coach touched on that. And we'll just go ahead and stick with Coach's comments saying it was a unique situation, that we love X, we'd love to have him here, but it's a very unique situation with Xavien Howard. So we'll keep you posted on that as we have more here on MiamiDolphins.com as well as the Drive Time podcast. Up next, Justin Coleman, a newcomer here. Number 27 is the jersey number, 6 years a pro out of Tennessee. He'll be 28 years old on opening day. And you notice a lot of these guys, and it goes back to safety too, with an Eric Rowe, for instance, Jason McCourty in that kind of ballpark as well. Late 20s, and that's a lot of veteran experience. And, well, you know, we talked about Gerald Alexander saying communication is so important. I think you get those veteran guys out there that can really help accelerate the communication skill of the position. So this group has a lot of guys in that mid to late 20s range with plenty of football experience in their back pocket. And Coleman played with Flores and Boyer in 2015 and 2016 with the Patriots before joining Seattle in 2017. And that's where his game took off as one of the premier slot cornerbacks from the word go. He held opposing slot receivers to 457 yards and 2 touchdowns allowed on 60 targets that first year, which is 7.6 yards per target and 2 picks and a passer rating of just 83.3. And among slot corners with at least 30 targets per season, he's ranked 8th in passer rating both of those 2 years with 83.3 and 82.5. Now then, with the Lions in 2019-2020, he missed a couple of games with injuries last season, but he was also utilized in a more multifaceted role as an outside corner, inside corner, box, blitzing, playing the run, doing a little bit of everything. We'll see what his role here is in Miami. As Coach Flores says, it'll be what he makes it, but he has been one of the game's best slot cornerbacks when he's been in that position. Jamal Perry, number 33, 4 years experience out of Iowa State, 26 years old at opening day. And this guy wears as many hats as anybody since he arrived in Miami. 312 snaps last season in a variety of roles. According to PFF, 15 snaps as a box defender, 82 in the slot, 7 snaps out on the perimeter, and 36 at free safety. But he also played 172 snaps on special teams, making 5 total tackles on that unit. And that kind of goes back to something I saw with his game. When he was a kind of dime defensive back, he would often be the 6th defensive back onto the field in 2019. If it's like 3rd and 13, you plant him at the sticks, they throw short of the sticks, he would rally and tackle. I loved his ability to come up and see the play in front of him and make the tackle short of the sticks to get the punt team onto the field. Terrell Bonds, number 35, 2 years experience out of Tennessee State. He'll be 25 years old come opening day. And starting with his pro career, he was in the AAF, the American Alliance of Football. Alliance of American Football, I forget the name of it, with the Memphis Express. And he spent the last 2 years with the Baltimore Ravens. He made his debut in the NFL in 2020, playing primarily on special teams. And with the aforementioned Express of the defunct AAF, he had a blocked punt and returned it for a touchdown in that league. Javaris Davis, number 38, 1 year experience out of Auburn. He was Noah Igbinoghene's teammate there at Auburn, 24 years old on opening day on the practice squad last year, but as a collegian, allowed quarterbacks to post an NFL passer rating of just 57.6, thanks in large part to his 8 picks compared to just 4 touchdowns allowed. So a 2-to-1 INT to touchdown ratio for Javaris Davis in college. And he really held receivers in a tough SEC to just a 53% completion rate as a collegian. Nick Needham, number 40, 2 years experience out of Texas El Paso. He'll be 24 years old opening day. We talked about his transition to the slot position, and to me that has to do with his footwork. He has such smooth and sweet feet, and that fits in line with the Miami Dolphins philosophy because he kicked inside to play nickel cornerback with immediate success, and he matched up with a handful of the game's best slot receivers, and he measured up every step of the way. Over the course of a month, he matched up with Cooper Kupp, Keenan Allen, Tyler Boyd, and Jamison Crowder. And those 4 guys against Nick Needham in coverage had 14 targets, 8 catches for 86 yards, and a pick. So great work against some of the league's best. And arriving as a rookie, he talked about focusing on his condition and the challenging first preseason where you may remember that first game. He started the opening game with Brian Flores, and I think it was the Falcons or the Bucks just went after him repeatedly. His first game in the pros out of UTEP. Like, that's going to happen. He had a rough preseason, but then he bounced back and showed you his mettle, showed you his character and his mental toughness to have a productive rookie season and an even better second season. He's a great example of how a player in August is not the finished product or the version of the player you expect to see in December. That's the entire philosophy of Brian Flores' team, to build, get better every single day. And Needham exemplifies that so far in his 2 years as a pro. Tino Ellis, number 46, 1 season out of Maryland, 23 years old on opening day. He was in the practice squad last year after a nice career with the Terrapins. There he allowed a career completion rate of just 53.3% via Pro Football Focus. He also registered a combined 15 pass breakups over his 4-year college career. And then Trill Williams, number 51, it looks weird every single time. I always think he's a linebacker out there. A rookie out of Syracuse, 21 years old come opening day. He's long and imposing. He can get his hands on you and play physical and press. Originally, he signed with the Saints as a UDFA, now with the Dolphins, hoping to parlay an accomplished college career into professional success. He allowed an NFL passer rating of just 79.1 at Syracuse with 4 interceptions compared to 4 TDs allowed, and he limited opposing receivers to a career completion rate of 58.7. So that's your cornerbacks. We have one more group to go, the safeties, coming up on a podcast near you. Me and my wife and a bunch of the gang from the Dolphins social and video department are heading out to the Marlins game to take on the San Diego Padres. I cannot wait to go watch Fernando Tatis. That's going to be must-see live action. I was going to say TV there, but to go to the ballpark to get myself a beer or two and watch some baseball, I cannot wait for that. It's been since 2019 with my Seattle Mariners. Haven't been back to Safeco Field yet. I can't wait to check out Lone Depot Park and watch the Marlins take on the Padres. And I really want to watch Tatis take 4 at bat. That's what I'm really going for in general. So that's it for the podcast. Come back with us on Monday. We'll talk about all things safeties, and then we'll roll this thing into Wednesday with training camp coverage here on the Drive Time Podcast. Keep it locked, your number one source for all things Miami Dolphins football. In the meantime, you all please be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcast. Leave us a rating. Leave us a review. Go ahead and give me a follow on Twitter. It's at Wingfield NFL. You can follow the team at Miami Dolphins. Check out the Fish Tank podcast with Seth and OJ. And of course, MiamiDolphins.com. Until next time, fins up.